ready? Hey, you think you can tell us what to do? You think you can tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters.
This is an ESPN 97.5 Roadshow, live from Toyota Center for UFC 192. This is The Blitz, brought to you by AcceptanceAppliance.com.
AGE factory approved warehouse outlet.
On ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's Fred Fowler and AJ Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. Hour number two, 713-780-ESPN is your number, 713-780-3776. You can also hit us up on the Blitz Facebook page. Find the Blitz, click like, put your comments on visitor posts. There's also Twitter, at Fred Fowler, at AJ is the real, at John E Football, at Degenerates 975. You can also text the show at 713-780-3776. And out here at Toyota Center for the weigh-ins, which are already done. Of course, a big UFC card tomorrow night. One less fight, which we talked about in the first hour. Everything that we did in the first hour, we had T.J. Dillashaw.
Tisha Torres.
So we hope to get a couple more guests while we're out here. And if so, you'll be able to hear all of them on podcastarena.com. Full show podcast now available. And you can also listen to us on TuneIn Radio, ESPN Radio app, and, of course, the website ESPN975.com. And we were talking about bad announcers. Well, guess what? We have some good news for you. If the Astros play any games beyond Sunday, they will be on our station with ESPN announcers. So you won't have to listen
there
to those
guys.
There
you go, national broadcast.
That's right. You'll be able to listen to the real announcers. So if the Astros are in the playoffs, and it's pretty simple. They win three, they're in.
Yep.
It's kind of where they are right now. And otherwise, I think 2-1's more likely. But you need the Twins or the Angels to lose another game, which I think is a possibility. But realistically, just win your three games, and you're in. 713-780-ESPN, your number, 713-780-3776. And I guess since we don't have anyone coming this direction, we'll stop in the middle if we do, but let's zip through the NFL games.
All right.
And we'll start off with the Dolphins and the Jets. Dolphins plus one at home against the Jets. And I don't have a great feel for this game, but I have to say I got to think the Dolphins are going to get right at some point.
I don't. I think the Dolphins are just terrible. I think they have one of the worst coaches in the NFL. And
yeah, maybe. I just don't. I'm not buying into the Jets either, though.
If you're a team willing to give up one of your home games to go play in London because you're that desperate for – I think their priorities are out of whack. And I just don't think the Dolphins are very good. I think that coach is bad. I think the team is overrated. I like the Jets.
Panthers and the Buccaneers in Tampa. Tampa plus three at home against Carolina. And I'd be tempted to take Tampa here, but the thing is, Carolina just keeps winning.
I'll take Carolina.
I think they're a hell of a lot better than – they're not flashy. They're not sexy. They just kind of grind out wins. But, yeah, I think I'm with you. I'm going to go with Carolina as well.
We've had the opportunity to see both of them up close and personal. And if you saw that game and you think that the Bucs are even remotely in the same class as Carolina, I don't know what you're watching.
It's hard to say road game versus home game. I mean, there's and frankly, there were a lot of plays out there to be made that the Bucs didn't make.
Well,
but
let's talk about this then. Let's talk about how Jameis Winston is one of the lowest-rated quarterbacks in the NFL, and he's just not – I'm not going to say he sucks because he's played three games. He's a rookie, but – he's not doing anything to make that team win, and Cam Newton is winning football games. So I'll take the Bucs. I'll take the Panthers.
Bills minus five at home against the Giants. Boy, that seems like a lot of points for the Bills, but they're playing well.
They are playing well. Probably a no play for me. If I had to lean one way, I'd probably lean to the home team.
Raiders at the Bears. Raiders favored on the road by three.
Yeah, this is really disappointing to me because I was hoping it would be about a pick 'em and I would be all over the Raiders, but I don't know if I'm looking to give up a field goal with this team. You know, I do think the Bears are a total mess right now, and the Bears, as long as Jimmy Clausen is playing, they're a disaster. If Cutler plays, I'll be plus three. If he doesn't, then it's a no play for me.
Eagles minus three at the Redskins, one of the many games that might be affected by the hurricane, including some of the baseball games. We'll have to get to that at some point today. But this is a game I have zero interest in, either from a betting perspective or a fan perspective?
I already have a play made on it at 5.5. It's down to 3 now. I mean, I'd play it anyway. I don't feel as good about it as 3, but I like the Redskins in this game. The line's moving quickly, though, you know, because it was 5.5 yesterday. So to be at 3 now, you know, maybe I don't know. Maybe I don't know what's going on, or maybe I know too much. I don't know. But there's interesting, a lot of interesting things in play. Specifically, the weather, like you mentioned. I don't know how it's gonna affect. But I hope they play that game in Washington, because if they do, then I definitely like the Redskins getting points at home.
Chiefs getting 4 at the Bengals. I don't think the Chiefs are 4 points worse than Cincinnati. It's easy to look at them and say, well, they got housed by Green Bay in Green Bay when everybody does. And, you know, they blew a game against the Broncos they should have won. I know Cincinnati's looked impressive, but I'll take the Chiefs plus 4 here.
Well, here's the thing. How much do you buy into Cincinnati?
I don't.
I mean, do you think that they're going to be 4-0 and, you know, one of the best teams in the NFL? Or do you think that Andy Dalton's overachieved so far? And really, Andy Dalton has looked great. I mean, that's usually a guy I'll take every chance to clown on. But if I were making, like, a top 10 list of MVP candidates through 3 games, Andy Dalton's somewhere in the mix. You know, he's definitely in the top 10. I'm kind of with you, though. I think the Chiefs are a little better than we've seen, and the Bengals aren't quite as good as we've seen.
And I'm getting 4 points with that, yeah. So I will take the Chiefs, and that's an actual play for me. The Chargers -7 at home against the Browns, who are just god-awful. I don't think the Chargers are that good either, but I'm not playing this one, but I might lean to the Chargers covering that 7.
Yeah, I want nothing to do with this game. But both these teams are terrible. Let's move on to the next one.
Packers -7. Well, you know what? There's a lot of games that I feel that way about this week, that these are just not good teams to watch.
But who's betting on that? Who wants to bet on Cleveland and San Diego with a 7-point line? There's nothing we can say that will make like, you could give me a grand explanation of why you'd give 7 or take 7. And at the end of the day, I'd think you were stupid for even caring about this game.
I bet RJ will have a...
He'll have something. He'll have something. It's his job to care about it.
Packers -7.5 at San Francisco.
It's so tempting.
It is tempting. Especially Green Bay coming off a big Monday night win.
Yeah, like everything lines up for me to bet on the Niners here. But I'm not even considering it. I'd be foolish to do so. The 49ers are playing just terribly bad football. The Packers are an opportunistic defense, and the 49ers have a quarterback who seems intent to give it to the other team. I think this could be ugly. I can't give 8 points on the road.
Yeah, and on the other hand, though, I mean, how motivated is Green Bay going to be coming off?
Yeah,
you know, coming off a Monday night game, going out there, playing a team that they know they're going to crush.
That's the difference between Green Bay and New England. If this was New England -8. I'd say New England's going to beat them by 20.
Yeah.
But Green Bay, they don't think the same way as the Patriots. So I'll leave that game alone. But, you know, I want to say the Packers motorboat them, but
I don't feel confident enough in that to bet it.
Motorboat them.
Motorboat.
I meant boat race, but motorboat.
Motorboat works better.
Motorboat works better.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't prefer a motorboat to a boat race? Minnesota +6.5 at Denver. I was hoping that number would be outside of 7, because then I would take the Vikings. I'm staying away from this one, too.
I'll probably take Denver.
I'm just not sold on them, and I like that Vikings defense, and I think, you know, I think that first week was a big aberration. I know playing in Denver's tough, but I'm not so sure that there's a 6.5-point difference between these teams, but I just don't have the cojones to pull a trigger on it.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about it either, but if I were making a play, I'd take Denver.
If it were 7.5, I'd be all over the Vikings.
I've got 7 on my side, so
okay.
I'll keep watching. Make you feel good.
I'll keep watching, because they do move around a lot during the weekend. One team that I'm just going to keep riding until they buck me off, not that you can actually ride a Cardinal, that would probably destroy it.
I've bet the Cardinals every game this week and every game every game this year.
-7. I don't care. I'll take the. I don't care that it's on a scoring number. I'll take the Cardinals again. I've already bet it.
They are they're the highest scoring team in football. They give up nothing. The Rams can't score. I mean, the Rams are just a terrible offensive football team. They couldn't score against the Steelers. The Steelers are terrible on defense. The Ravens put up points on that team, and the Cardinals couldn't. Well, they score 6.
The Rams, yeah.
Or yeah, the Rams. I don't see how that team is going to keep up with Arizona. Arizona really good offensively and defensively. That's That's a team that I think a lot of people are sleeping on and shouldn't be.
At least for the first part of the season, they look like one of the two or three best teams in football,
nope.
And the Rams do not. How are the Saints favored by three over anyone at home these days?
It's a good question. I guess Brandon Whedon.
That's the answer.
And the rumors out there that Drew Brees is playing. I don't know that makes me comfortable enough to bet them -3. I'd probably be leaning the Cowboys, even if Drew Brees does play. In all honesty, I wouldn't be in love with it if Drew Brees plays, but if he doesn't play, to me +3 is a gift. I like the Cowboys.
Lions +9.5 at the Seahawks on Monday night.
You mean the Hawks?
The Lions have been so disappointing. I keep thinking they're going to wake up. They're going to wake up, and they just look worse and worse every week. And I think this is one of those games that could just spiral their season into a total mess.
I think so, too. And I think the Seahawks, they got that swagger back last week. I mean, in that building, they are just a different team. And they proved it last week. I think they'll look for a chance to prove it again. And, you know, Seattle, for a team that's 1-2, like, I don't know if the Colts are still, you know, a Super Bowl contender at 1-2. Like, just from watching them play, I don't know if they are. The Seahawks are definitely a Super Bowl contender. If you don't think so, you're just not paying attention. They're 1-2, but, and I'm not saying they're the best team in the league, but they're not a contender.
I don't think
they're not a bad team.
They're not a bad team.
The Colts look like a bad team.
Yeah.
The Seahawks are still very, very good and have the best home field advantage in football. I'll take them 9.5.
And we'll break down the Texans a little bit more when we come back from break. And Texter asked, any plays for tonight's football games? Fred, I took Montreal last night and felt like I got punched in the face. Yeah, I thought the quarterback change was really going to work for them. I went 1-1 because I bet Cincinnati as well, but I bet a little bit on Cincinnati, and I bet about twice that on Montreal. So I'm down for the week already. But that's going to bounce back tonight.
It's all right, man. You'll get there.
Both kind of like South Florida a little bit tonight outside of touchdown.
Yep, if you can get more than 7, I like South Florida. I like BYU and Connecticut, the under in that game.
This is an ESPN 97.5 Roadshow, live from Toyota Center for UFC 192. This is The Blitz, brought to you by AcceptanceAppliance.com on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz, live here at Toyota Center, where the UFC wins took place a little while ago. And at least we know one person who was there.
Yeah, Jeremy Botter was in there. Being a big, MMA covering reporter guy, unlike us who were just sitting around telling dick jokes all day. Jeremy Botter in from Vegas. How's it going, man?
Okay, that sounds way more entertaining than what I had to go. I mean, that sounds way more entertaining.
That's probably more entertaining. I'm sure. Now, I know you don't go to every fight. But when they announced that it was in Houston, was that one of the ones that you were like, I'll be there for that?
Yeah, because I can mix in a vacation. You know, I grew up in Katy, so mix in a vacation with the parents and then come down here and watch some fights, you know?
Now, I know that you are a Sage Northcutt advocate.
I am.
I am a staunch non-believer. I keep saying...
Is he too good looking for you? Is that what it is?
No, I don't understand how a guy goes 5-0 literally fighting no one good. Like, he and I have a common opponent.
That's terrible for him, then. I need to rethink everything.
It's terrible. We have a common opponent. He's 5-0, and so I have a hard time when you haven't – to go from fighting guys with upside-down records and things like that to being thrown into the UFC against a guy who's 12-1. I will say this for him. Frank, at weigh-ins, missing by 5 pounds doesn't make me feel good about his situation, and he sent me a message saying he's not feeling great. He was actually supposed to come to the show. He's not feeling great, and you said he's not looking great. So that doesn't bode well for me being proven right tomorrow night. But I'm curious, what about him you see that makes you think that he is going to live up to this hype that's kind of already being thrown at him?
Right. He is getting a lot of hype, and, you know, actually that's partially my fault. I can say that this week because the Houston Chronicle, I pitched his backstory to them.
If he wasn't from Katy, would you be on him? What if he was from Baytown? Would you be as as on top of this
I think I probably still would.
Okay.
I mean, I haven't lived in Katy in a long time, you know, okay. So, and I don't live there for a reason. I did like it. I did like growing up there. But, you know, this is a kid, look, I mean, this is not a guy who's 5-0 and who just started training. This is not CM Punk. He didn't start training a year ago, a year and a half ago. This kid's been fighting, doing karate since he was 4 years old. He's a phenomenal striker. And not only that, I mean, going back and watching his footage, and granted, he wasn't facing the best of opponents, but, you know, he's got some really slick takedowns and a really slick move to the back. I mean, he really does. This is not a kid who just kind of jumped into it entering high school and is now doing it for fun. They didn't just sign him because he's a good-looking dude, which they did clearly sign him. That's one of the reasons they signed him.
Right.
You know, he's very marketable. There is a lot of potential there. I think the kid has a ton of potential. I didn't know a lot about him until probably 2 weeks ago. You know, and then I really started looking into him, hearing about his background. Starting at 4 years old, doing 500 push-ups and sit-ups a day when he's 4 years old. It's kind of like the little Marinovich type upbringing. You know, which you know you wonder if that's going to go bad at some point.
Well,
but for now, you know, yeah, you're right. I am on the kid. I think he's. I mean, you know, I don't know that he is a future star for sure, but I think he has the potential to be one.
Derek Lewis, the other local guy fighting tomorrow, and maybe his last shot in the UFC. This seems to be a winnable fight. What do you think of the matchup, and what do you think of Derek's chances?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a winnable fight, and I think that if he can't win this, he
shouldn't be in the UFC.
He shouldn't be in the UFC, right? Because, I mean, Victor Pesta is about the bottom of the barrel when it comes to the UFC heavyweights, and the UFC heavyweight division is already not good. You know?
Right.
But the cool thing about Derek is, I mean, I've seen him at the hotel this week, and you know, he's so chill walking
he's
around.
The most.
There's no pressure. If there is, you can't see it. He's just super relaxed, walking around, just hanging out. I mean, I think this is a winnable fight for him. You know, and I hope so because I mean, he's a big knockout artist.
Yeah.
It's good to have those on cards, especially when they come back to Texas.
Yeah, he's at least a fun guy to watch.
Right, exactly. You know? And dude, you can't say that for the whole heavyweight division.
You cannot. They lose their co-main event. Johnny Hendricks has problems making weight, and it, depending on who you believe, I mean, he couldn't make weight, or he had a non-weight related emergency that you know kept him from cutting the last of his weight. Regardless, you know, we've been talking about this a lot today. Is it going to be a problem for Johnny Hendricks to? Like, Johnny Hendricks seems like he wants to be a part-time fighter. And in his off time, he wants to
and a part-time eater.
Eat cookies and pizza.
Yes.
And you if you're going to be a professional athlete at the highest level, you just can't do that. I mean, do you think that this is going to be a wake-up call for Johnny? Or we've heard him say before, he may just walk away from the sport. What do you think this does to Johnny's career?
Well, for starters, I mean, it is, from what I can gather, it is a way, you know. I mean, he was, on Tuesday, he was 198 pounds, trying to get to 170 on Friday. So Thursday night, kidney stones, obviously, you know, I mean, you get dehydrated, that stuff can happen. And then intestinal blockage too. Like there's all kinds of things that went wrong with Johnny Hendricks' body, you know. As of now, Dana White says he's a middleweight. You know, he's going to have to go to 185, just like Kelvin Gastelum. And here's the thing about 185 and Johnny Hendricks is that he is way too small for that.
Yeah.
He's going to get eaten up. I mean, I think that if that sticks and he is forced to go to 185, his days as a championship-level fighter are over.
Someone asked me about that today, like, do I think Johnny Hendricks can hang at 185? And I said, if you stood Johnny Hendricks next to Luke Rockhold, you would laugh at the prospect of Johnny Hendricks ever being a champion at 185 pounds.
Yeah, it's like Gustafson and Cormier.
It really is.
But, you know, much different weight. They're just,
right.
Yeah, he's a, you know, but he brought it on himself, honestly. Look, the guy owns a steakhouse in Dallas. I mean, you know, and you can imagine Johnny Hendricks pulling his giant truck up there every day, twice a day, eating steaks and stuff, you know. Last summer, I mean, I think you were in Vegas last summer, and I remember seeing him, and he looked like he weighed 235 pounds, and that's because he did weigh 235 pounds. How do you get that big when you know, you're supposed to be an athlete? I've never understood that about Johnny Hendricks. It's really unfortunate, too, because I was looking forward to that fight because I thought that it was a chance for Tyron Woodley to score the biggest win of his career. I really did.
Now, I mean, and who knows, because Dana said this before and it doesn't work out, but now – it looks like he's going to get that shot anyway.
Well, that's what Dana said, which means he probably won't get it.
He probably
won't.
Because
that's what happens every time. Dana's like, you got a title shot. And he's like, oh, no. That means I'm not getting it.
What do you think of the main event? What's your take on it?
Cormier all day, man. I mean, I just think it's a bad style fight for Alexander Gustafsson. And I also don't think Alex's head is in the fight. I mean, if you're talking about retirement leading into a fight like this, it's not good, man. It's not mentally good. Cormier is a guy, you know, I mean, obviously – Dan Henderson is not Gustafsson, and, you know, Gustafsson is different than all the guys that, you know, Cormier's fought. But, I mean, Cormier has thrown heavyweights around the ring.
Yeah.
you know, just toss him in the air, throw him around. I think that's what you're going to see here, man. I think you're going to see him get in there, get in close, do a lot of trips, do a lot of throws. I think he's probably going to win by submission second or third round.
I did say it's so interesting to see their mutual opponents and see the way Gustafson went against Jones and looked fantastic against John Jones, and Jones just decimated Cormier, and then the exact opposite happened with Rumble Johnson.
Yeah.
And it really does
MMA
math. Styles make fights.
Yeah, MMA math does not work, but styles do make fights.
All right, before we let you go, what's your pick for fight of the night?
Fight of the night, I'm actually going to go with Alan Jouben. That fight is just a phenomenal fight, man. That's a sick fight. You know what, man, this card is really stacked.
Like the Hooker-Rodriguez fight.
That fight is so good.
Stoked Jouben about that.
Fight. I mean, you know, you look at Bagatinov and Benavidez, that could be a sick fight. There are good fights up and down the card. And I think Rashad Evans, Ryan Bader, I mean, you saw Rashad, he was in phenomenal shape.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a barn burner too. I'm really excited about this card. I mean, I think everybody in Houston should check it out.
UFC 194. Do you think it actually happens? And if so, is it the biggest?
We shouldn't talk about it because are we kind of jinxing it?
We'll talk about it some different time.
Yeah, okay.
Like maybe the day after it happens.
I think it'll happen, but you know, knock on wood.
All right, that's Bleacher Report's Jeremy Botter. Appreciate the time, Jeremy. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Thanks, man. Appreciate
Enjoy
it.
Your stay.
All right, we're going to take a very quick break. Thing you need to know about betting on the NFL this weekend. Don't go anywhere. It's The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
The glitter's is gold, and she's buying a stairway to heaven. When she gets
this is an ESPN 97.5 road show, live from Toyota Center for UFC 192. This is The Blitz, brought to you by AcceptanceAppliance.com on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz, live from Toyota Center. The UFC will take place tomorrow night. And there's also a lot of football this weekend and a lot of betting to do. And there's no one better for that than our good pal RJ Bell, pregame.com. Talk a little gambling with us. What's going on, Mr. Bell? How are you today?
I'm just thinking, how great is Stairway to Heaven that version still sounds okay?
Fred likes it when crappy bands ruin great songs. That's his thing.
But the great song, it's you ever notice like on like 10 Things I Hate About You or some of the movies where they put like the attractive actress, they put glasses on her and dress her in like overhauls and they act like she's ugly?
Yeah.
It's kind of like Stairway is like that. There's that that inner beauty buried beneath it.
So funny how AJ likes to dog me for my music taste and some of the crap he listens to. I wouldn't let my children listen to. Anyway, all right, I don't know how often people are going to ask you about the Jets-Dolphins game, but it being in London, is there any advantage to playing this game in terms of any trends that we can look at from the past London games?
You know, I think one that I came up with, but people talked about a good bit this week when I, you know, did my survey around. And that's really, I think, what gives us a great opportunity to share a lot of good information is I do my radio show, the podcast, and I'm just constantly asking the questions. And one of the takeaways was when you have a team who has played in London in the last year or two, it's an advantage because it's a unique trip. And if you have the experience, think of like when the first time you go, you know, I spoke, as you guys might recall, like a year and a half ago at South by Southwest. When I go back, the fact I went for the first time to Austin for that, you know, South by Southwest, I know, okay, I want to stay here and I want to do this. Everyone has those experiences with any kind of unique travel. And I think if Miami's a team that's done this before, the Jets haven't, to me that's an advantage for Miami. That said, I actually like the Jets in this game.
And they're bringing their own toilet paper too. So.
Oh, well, there you go. And with the Jets, I think here's the reason is it's not so much I love the Jets because I think so far you can't. It's hard to get a great handle on the Jets because in the first two games they were +8 in turnovers. So they were going to win those games regardless. They did. Against Philly, they were -3 in turnovers. So, you know, it's almost impossible to win a game when you're -3. So, they won when they should have. They lost when they should have. I think it's Miami is where the problem is. You can say the coach and the turmoil, and I actually think that's a big deal. I mean, you know, reading the local Miami papers, and I did a little, you know, deep dive on this, the players are starting to complain about the length of the practices, about there's too much intensity during practice. when you've got that, you know you've got big problems. And when you look at this defense, I mean, Sue, big money for him on the D-line. In the last nine games, now I know that goes back to last year, Miami's given up 160 yards rushing per game. And this year hasn't been any better. Last week against the Bills, Miami had zero sacks. The week before, the Bills were sacked eight times. I mean, this D-line's doing nothing. And to me, you add that up with the turmoil, I think the Jets minus one's a really strong play.
Got to ask you about the Texans and Falcons. And right now, seeing 6.5, and there's a lot of buzz that Arian Foster might play. I don't know how much that affects what the line would wind up being, but sure seems to me that that seems a little bit low, frankly, from what we've seen out of the Texans. Obviously, we're a lot closer to it.
Well, I disagree. I really like the Texans here. You guys can tell me, but what blue – so Alfred Blue had 139 yards last week, right? 31 carries.
Yep.
Certainly want the main running back back. But let's talk about value, because this is a handicap that once you learn this technique, once you have this in your toolbox, you can take advantage of it in different spots, which is you look at the early one-week look-ahead line. So in Vegas, the Westgate, and we put this up at pregame.com each week, they have a line for next week's games, right? So you can bet week five right now. What's great about those lines is you can see how much they move just based upon the 1 week of action. Because other than injuries, and like with Big Ben or whatever, that was a huge move. And that was driven by injuries. But other than that, it's just what happened in the 1 week. What did we learn, right? So last week in this game, Atlanta was favored by 3.5. I remember Houston was considered the better team than Atlanta entering the season, right? Atlanta starts out 2-0, you know, prior to last week, and, you know, Houston doesn't. So, all right, Atlanta's at home slightly more than 3. That's fine, 3.5. Now, last week, Houston dominated. I mean, I don't know how you do better than 30 first downs for Tampa Bay's 14. I mean, that there tells me the story. It was domination in the trenches. And the Falcons win against a Cowboys team without a quarterback. But now they're 3-0. Now there's the Sports Center segments and thinking back to Matty Ice and in the dome and all that stuff. The line's up to 6.5. I mean, I would make the case that incrementally, or I guess marginally, that Houston was more impressive last week to me than Atlanta. If you just look at last week, but the line's gone up 3 points. I think it's just pure. The public loves the zero in the loss column. And Atlanta's getting a ton of attention. And I think Houston plus 6.5 is really strong.
I think the public loves quarterbacks, too. And I think people have seen what Matt Ryan's doing and with Julio Jones. And they continue to see that the quarterback situation here in Houston is bleak and does not look to be getting much better. And I think maybe that's what's driving some of that.
But wasn't that the case a week ago?
Well, that's been the case all season long. Yeah, you're right.
I'm saying, what's changed since last week? Because you could have bet Atlanta minus 3.5 last week.
Well, what changed since last week is, and this is just me throwing it out there, but I think the only thing that's changed positively for Atlanta is Julio Jones looks like, you know, he's an MVP candidate. Matt Ryan looks like he's finally kind of turning into the Matt Ryan that he's been. And I think you saw Atlanta have a running game last week, which...
Well, I tell you, it doesn't sound like a team that trailed in the fourth quarter of all three games.
No, I mean, you're right. You're right. But let's also keep in mind the Texans just beat... They just got their first win, and they got it against a quarterback who's ranked at the bottom of the league, and their secondary's been giving it up all season long, and they're about to see the best quarterback that they've had, that they've seen all year.
Fair enough, but then Falcons minus 3.5 last week was the game of the year then, right? But, I mean, you know... It wasn't bet like
no,
that.
I said earlier, I think the line is out of whack. I'm not looking to give up 6.5 points.
So you agree with me? It's a little inflated.
I do.
You're just pessimistic about Houston.
I'm just pessimistic about the Texans.
Fair enough.
Really being competitive in general. there's a line that's moved a lot, and I'm curious as to why the Eagles Redskins line has gone from 5.5, 6 in some places down to 3.
Well, it could be because I love the Redskins. No,
I do too.
Yeah, love the Redskins here. This is actually, it's funny. We just talked about my three best bets of the week, which is great. But this might be the best one. Is I love it when the score and the narrative where the score's deceiving, but the score fits the narrative, I guess. So in a way, we already talked about Philly. They had the big turnover advantage against the Jets. So, you know, they won the game, even though really they got outplayed. They got outgained by 92 yards in that game. You know, and Bradford was 14 of 28. I mean, for, you know, 14 of 28 for 118 yards. 28 pass attempts for 118 yards. That's horrendous. So the Eagles... Now, though, here's how it plugs in the narrative. Oh, there's that playoff team. They beat the Jets at New York. You know, that's that team we thought Chip Kelly had. But if you look at the season, the Eagles have the third worst yardage differential in the NFL. So yardage differential, what's that? How many yards do you gain? How many yards does your opponent gain? That gets to the fundamentals of football right there. Third worst in the NFL. Oh, by the way, the best in the NFL – Washington Redskins, best yardage differential in the NFL. Doesn't mean they're the best team. They're not even close. I don't even think they're average. I think they're just better than people think. Now, there's two other reasons I like the Skins here. One is the weather, right? It's supposed to be windy. It's supposed to be, you know, bad, maybe really bad. Well, who does that hurt? It hurts the finesse offense, right?
Not the team that's the great running team.
Not the running team. So that's another advantage. And lastly, Washington has the extra days off of Thursday. Now, that's an advantage for any team that plays on Thursday, but it's a bigger advantage against one of the unusual, quirky offenses. If you wanted extra time to prepare for any team, Philly's probably the one. So I think it all works for Washington plus three.
I've never thought I'd say that Jay Cutler would be the difference between me wanting to play a game and not. But if I can get the Bears as an underdog with Jay Cutler at home against the Raiders, I want that all day. But I just cannot bring myself to put money down when Jimmy Clausen is playing quarterback. I mean, why is this number the way it is, and is does it seem right to you?
You know, Mel Kiper is making a big play on the Bears.
Oh, I'm sure.
but here's what I'll say.
We'll never forget that, will we?
Well, yeah, he was strong. I love Mel. It's so entertaining. It's just anyone's going to be – listen, the best pro bettors are wrong 45% of the time. So, but here's what I'll say is Vegas actually ranks Clausen as a two-point downgrade, and that's it. So, I mean, as bad as Clausen is, it really shows you Cutler is not well regarded. So, actually, with Oakland favored by three, the assumption is that if it were, you know, not Clausen and it were Cutler, that Oakland still would be one. And think about this. Last 25 road games for the Raiders. Now, they never make the playoffs, so this is three-plus years now, right? 25 games. 3-22 straight up. 3-22, and they're laying points on the road. I mean, I do Chicago ESPN. I said, guys, you got to feel bad about that one. And so to me, it's just how bad the Bears are. I don't want to lay points with the Raiders on the road. But listen, Raiders look, you know, early in the season, I think we talked about this last week, you want to look at that Thursday game and see what we learned, because there's so few games, it can tell you about some of the teams. And what we saw was Baltimore, you know, is not a horrible team. And, you know, as a Steeler fan, that was a gut-wrenching game. But, you know, Baltimore was not a horrible team. They won in Pittsburgh when they were, you know, should have lost the game. So, to me, that Oakland win just looks even better now. And, by the way, just a macro tip, you can do this with the 1 o'clock games, right? Once it's in the third quarter or fourth quarter, those 1 o'clock Eastern games, you now have more data to bet the 4 o'clocks. And then, obviously, the 8 o'clock, you got even more data. So, early in the year especially, that extra game of information about who's played those teams. You know, imagine a team that we thought was good gets blown out at 1 o'clock. Well, you know, that, you know, you're going to make an adjustment based on who that team played with the teams, you know, the opponents in that case.
RJ, I know we're out of time, but I want to ask real quickly, how on earth can you play a game where the Saints are favored at home after what's happened with them over the last, really since last season? I guess Brandon Whedon's the answer, right?
Well, yeah, Whedon, 10 straight starts he's lost, and 10 straight starts he's lost against the spread. That's hard to do when you're a backup because you're getting points a lot of the time. And I will say this, the Saints used to, I mean, just a year ago, year and a half ago, best home field in the NFL. In 19 games in a row at a certain point recently, they were 18-0-1 against the spread. Now the last 8 at home, 1-7 against the spread. One last thought, though, to leave you guys with. They did better even in prime time home games, 11-1 against the spread. So I do think there's that extra intensity in the dome. So I wouldn't look to play against the Saints.
All right, that's RJ Bell, pregame.com. Terrific website. Check it out if you haven't, and you should always follow RJ on Twitter because he's always got great stuff. Always a pleasure, my friend. Look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thanks, guys.
I got to tweet RJ a question. I had one more I wanted to ask him. Ran out of time.
Yeah, we went way over. That's my fault.
No, it's all of our fault.
It's on me, John. Quick break. It's a Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
Alabama, Georgia, college football, 3 p.m. Saturday on ESPN 97.5.
And we are back on the Blitz. Are you up for whatever? Could be college football, a trip out of town, or maybe playoff tickets to see Houston's home team make a run in October. Join Raheel and the ESPN 97.5 road crew.
And Dell.
No, he's not there.
Oh.
I just thought that's
Granato and Raheel.
Well, but see, there's no Granato first. This is just Raheel.
Oh.
So join Raheel and the ESPN 97 road crew for Up for Whatever Sundays presented by Bud Light. This week we're at Taps House of Beer on Washington from noon until 2. Texans face the Falcons. It could be your Sunday to win whatever. Kind of a waste sending Raheel to a place like that. He doesn't drink.
Yeah, Raheel doesn't drink.
Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah,
I would be drinking if I were there.
Foolish mistake on their part.
Yeah, that's – oh, well. But, hey, as long as you're up for whatever, including not drinking. All right, let's do the Zadok Jewelers Gem of the Day.
The Gem of the Day. It's the Gem of the Day. The Zadok Jeweler Gem of the Day.
Apparently, there's some really stupid animal names out there. A shark biologist, a guy named David Schiffman, decided earlier this month to call out animals with stupid common names. He asked fellow scientists to share the common names of animals that are misleading, weird, or just plain stupid. Common names being like trout or you know, something like that. Not the scientific name.
Bullfrog.
Bullfrog is, yeah, that's one. Well, here are...
Dog.
Dog, yes, as opposed to Canis whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know any scientific animal names.
Is it Canis or canine?
I don't know.
I think Canis is like a dog ass.
Could be. I don't know.
It's a scientific word for dog butt, Canis.
I know Homo erectus is the only one I know.
Okay.
That's it. But anyway, so here are some common names. A couple of fish, actually, or three fish. These are real names. The creek chub sucker.
Okay.
I don't know why.
That's the best kind of fish to run into when you're in the river.
I would think if you're in a creek, obviously.
Not in the river, in a creek only.
Yeah, because he's a creek chub sucker.
In a river, he may be overwhelmed and bite down.
Yeah, and you don't want that. You've got to see if this thing has teeth, I'm sure. If it's a sucker, though, probably not, because most sucker fish just have the little the little snout thing where they suck, right?
Right.
Okay. The sarcastic fringe head. That's a real fish name. Sarcastic fringe head.
Who's naming these stupid fish?
I don't know. That sounds like something you would name it. Here's my favorite. The slippery dick.
He should meet that sucker fish.
That's exactly what I was thinking. If the chub sucker ran into the slippery dick, who knows what would happen.
Hmm.
But then the... Then they went on and just had a bunch of animals with misleading names. But there's nothing as good as slippery dick or chub sucker. Like the electric eel apparently is not an eel. And the king cobra is not a cobra. So they've got a whole bunch of names like that. The horny toad is not a toad. But it doesn't mean he's not horny.
Right. Well, what is it? Is it a lizard?
It's a lizard. It doesn't say exactly what they are.
But it's too fat to be a lizard. The horny toad has always been a strange creature to me.
You know, when I was growing up, my grandparents had this little place down in Hitchcock, and they were all over the place growing up.
Oh, really?
And now you can't see them down here anymore.
No, I used to catch them when I lived in New Mexico, and I was in like, I don't know, 8th, 9th grade, and I would put them in people's lockers. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. They were fun.
That was really hilarious. I'd let them go in the gym.
But they were great for pranks because they were easy to pick up. You just grab them by the horns, you pick them up, and then you could put them in somebody's locker. You could put them in their underwear, and they go to grab their clothes
or something. They look terrifying.
Yeah, and they're actually
not
pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I don't know what happened to those. I never see them around here anymore.
Hipster Serpico says, thanks. Now my kids are saying dog anus and slippery dick.
Did you not play the thing, Jong, that this isn't for children? This parental discretion is advised?
I would just point out that those two were not included in the same thing. The dog anus.
Slippery dick and canis had nothing to do with each other.
No, it was just part of the same segment, but. Yeah, I'm not the one who named the fish Slippery Dick.
Listen, we're not here to parent your children, okay?
Well, I'm not here to name fish apparently either.
If they can't have open and honest discussions about dog ass, then that's a you problem. You failed as a parent.
Maybe you shouldn't have a dog.
That's right.
Because
or a child for that matter.
Well, they should know where the dog anus is.
Right.
I mean, you're going to have to clean up after them, right?
And what if they're one day having a scientific conversation, like maybe they're trying to get interviewed for a job and they don't know the scientific term, so they just say dog ass instead of canis? And then how are you gonna get the job when you're saying dog ass at an interview? You're not. You've got to make it sound more medical. Canis.
Wait a minute, that's how I got this job. I was talking about dog ass instead of canis.
This isn't a real job.
Oh, all right. Guys, by the way, that was your Zadok Jewelers Gem of the Day.
I'm sure they're proud.
Gem of the Day. It's
they must
the
be so proud to sponsor this fine segment.
Zadok Jeweler Gem of the Day.
If we haven't chased him off with some of the other stuff, I don't think that Slippery Dick's going to do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was pretty cool when I got in here today and looked at Twitter, and there were a bunch of people at Tupelo's tweeting about being out at Tupelo's tonight. I was a little disappointed that we weren't there, but we're out here at Toyota Center. So Tupelo's a great place, man. Love those guys. Chip and his team are great. Now that it's football season, you want to watch those Astros tonight, perfect place to go tonight. If you want to sit, you can sit almost anywhere in the bar. You can see all the TVs. You'll be able to watch the football game tonight. You'll be able to watch the Astros. You'll be able to keep up with all the sports going on because they've got you covered there at Tupelo's. They've got great food. It's amazing. It's not your average sports bar menu. There's really nothing on the menu that isn't awesome. It's a great place to take your whole family, too. Take the family, watch the games, have some great beer. Also, coming up October 12th, a little more than a week away, Tupelo's is having its first annual charity golf tournament at the Woodlands Palmer Course, benefiting Easter Seals of Greater Houston. Easter Seals, among other great things, runs a Caroline school that was damaged in the flooding back in May. ESPN 97.5 is proud to be a sponsor. Check out 975golf.com for the details. And to register or otherwise support the cause, and for you guys out there tonight, have one for me. Great place to hang out. Make it your home away from home. 2907 Rayford Road in Spring. That's Tupelo's, Tupelo's.com.